Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I'm designer Dave Say.
And it's Monday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day.
Is it?
Yes.
I'm not wearing anything.
So here. I decided for the rest of the day we're going to have to talk Irish.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. We're all drinking beer right now for the rest of the day. We're all wearing green. We all dyed our hair red. We're wearing little leprechaun hats on. The studio is filled with four-leaf clovers. It's lovely. And yeah, so it's a nice day out. It's sunny, which is nice. It's still cold though.
It is pretty cold,
but it's supposed to start getting warmer now. Spring is around the corner. It'll be nice. Last week it was really nice. There was one. Was it this weekend? When was it? Saturday. Yeah, Saturday was like gorgeous out. Like we walked all over Nashua.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Nice like we day. Came here, and then the Nashua Public Library had their Friends of the Library book and media sale.
I saw Sarah's posting about that.
Yes, yeah, so we came here and we parked here, and then we walked over to the library and we bought some books and music and stuff, and then we walked to Bonhoeffer's so she could get a coffee, and then we walked.
Were they open?
Yeah, they were just closed. We had 10 minutes before they closed for a private function
on Saturday.
On a Saturday.
Yeah, usually they were. Always closed in the past.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they were open because of the function. I don't know. But she got her whatever mocha loco chate latte thing. Mm-hmm. And then we walked along where they're building the river walk. And we walked back on the railroad tracks. And then we came back around. And then we finally came inside and got my taxes organized. Woo! So it was nice, though. It was a nice day. We walked around. It's cool.
Yeah, I stayed in.
You stayed in.
Mostly it was, I had converted my Macintosh for doing local web development for my WordPress site.
Okay.
Before I used to make the edits on the server in a private directory and then upload it. But a friend of mine recently installed all this development stuff on his Mac and said, it's awesome. So I said, oh, I should try this. So I installed MySQL, PHP, enabled a local web server, and it was amazingly fast.
Really?
It was a lot faster to do this locally, and I wasn't poisoning my development environment, my development server. So I decided that I'm going to switch over the Macintosh from Windows.
Which now, but you've been using Mac, but you're just using boot thing?
No. I got a new Mac about, when was that, like last year? End of last year? And my old Mac, which was from 2007, was too slow to really do anything anymore. Plus, it was gigantic. And so I'd saved up enough money from all the online sales for the productivity pad stuff to buy a new Macintosh. So I bought this one, which is a MacBook Pro 15 Retina, which is just as fast as my desktop Windows workstation. Instead of launching Bootcamp in it, which is what I would have done before. Bootcamp being the software that allows you to boot Windows and completely bypass the Mac OS because I hated it. I said I should learn how to use this thing like a Macintosh, like the people do. And I've been slowly getting used to it. And the one thing I liked about it is that it was Unix underneath of the operating system. So you could do all this Unix-y type stuff that you really can't do on Windows because it's based on, you know, it's like Eastern Europe underneath under the surface.
That's Penguin, right?
No, that's Linux you're thinking
of. Oh, okay. What's the difference?
Linux is a variant of, I think it's BSD. This would be a good question for our guest, actually. He might know the answer to this.
Yes.
And would you like to introduce our guest?
Sure. So he's been a longtime sort of joke on the podcast. Not a joke, but our joke is that we mention his name at least once every podcast. Because up until recently, we thought he might be the only listener that we had. So we thought we'd give him a little Easter egg every episode and we'd mention his name. But we actually have him in the studio now.
Very excited.
Yes, the infamous Kenta Koga.
Yay!
Hey guys. Kenta. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Yep. So Kenta, do you know offhand, not to put you on the spot or anything, but I know that you're involved with the local Linux user group.
Yeah, so I actually started up a Linux users group in Manchester called Manchester Linux Users Group, but we haven't met in 6 months. But I think to answer your question, I think that the Apple OS X is based on a variant of FreeBSD.
Ah, yes.
So it is free BSD based, but it is not free BSD anymore.
Free BSD like being like open source?
Uh, I
It's a venerable Unix variant, right? From
I don't know if it can. I don't know if that's actually open source. I think they have their own. Well, okay. They have their own license, I believe. But
the free just threw me off.
Yeah, it's it is free for distribution.
Okay. Huh.
But it's different.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of branches of Unix. BSD is it's a pretty old one. It's like OpenBSD.
Yeah, it's one of the originals.
BSD.
Yeah.
I think the B stands for Berkeley.
Berkeley Standard Distribution or something like that. Yeah. And then Linux is not based in, it wasn't originally fork from, it was like a kernel that I think Linus Torvalds wrote
it from scratch.
To learn how to write an operating system. And it's just because it's grown and grown and grown and grown. Whereas Mac OS is based on something called the Mach kernel.
Okay.
Which they took from an operating system called NextStep, which used to run on Next workstations, which was Steve Jobs' venture after he got booted from Apple back in the 90s. And so this is where they were making, these were high-end graphic workstations at the time. Mm-hmm. And this is how he got involved with the Pixar people too, because they were looking for, Pixar was originally a hardware company.
Yeah.
And they were making these software demos to sell their hardware.
Okay.
But the thing about Nexus, the box was really cool.
It was cool. There was one in our grad school.
Just a square black cube.
Oh, really?
And it didn't have a floppy drive. It had a CD writer.
Huh.
That was the only option. Yeah. It's like, you want to get your data off this thing?
You could write
it to a CD.
Yeah.
They were thinking ahead.
It was like a magneto optical drive, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember.
I think it might have been, either warm or use one CDs or rewritables or
there's something nuts about it.
Yeah,
it was like Steve Jobs' obsession with future-looking storage technologies that upsell us everything else before. But I can see the podcast taking a geeky turn already.
Yeah, I was just sitting back like, listen to these two nerds talking about their programming languages. This is great.
So I forgot what we were talking about.
We
were introducing Kenta.
Yes.
We were introducing him for a reason. We might as well just
talk about
right
Linux.
Into,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was switching over from Windows,
Windows to Mac.
To Macintosh. And I think we've said enough about that.
So are you going to completely switch everything over?
I am making the Macintosh my primary computer now.
Okay. But you still have a Windows.
Oh, yeah. Thing. It's a beast.
Because you got to play your games and stuff.
Got to play my games. You know, there's something nice about building your own Windows box. It's like building your own lightsaber. You go and you look and you say, like,
yes!
What kind of gamer am I going to be? Am I going to be an FPS player? I'm going to, like, then I'll need, like, you know, the badassest, like, graphics card I can afford. Do I want to go, like, dual video card and have a Sly set up? Or do I want to go AMD and Crossfire or whatever it is? And then you pick your motherboard, and then you pick your CPU, and you try to find that magic point, like where the price and performance is just where you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you think, then I had to get a cool case for this. And how much RAM am I going to put into it? And I need to buy the right DVD drive or a Blu-ray drive. And you put the whole thing together, and you know it's yours, and you wear it in.
You know. I think that's why PC gamers look down on console gamers, because my solution is I just go to Target and I buy the new Xbox, the new PlayStation when it comes out.
Yeah. It's almost plug and play, baby.
It feels like a cop out.
Play.
It's probably a lot more practical. I was talking to someone the other day and thinking that they could buy a PC or it would be a lot easier for them just to buy an Xbox One.
Yeah,
and they would probably be fine. You know, but there's something about building your own PC, which is very satisfying. It also is a big pain in the ass. So, you know, like back in the day when you used to build your own machine, there would be all these chipset problems and like there'd be incompatibilities and the USB bus would interfere with like the PCI Express card. Or like you had some old card you were trying to use and it happened to use the same set of interrupts that some new thing on the motherboard uses, so you had to figure out how to disable it. Oh, and there's all these bugs in the firmware, and you had to download a new BIOS, and it was a pain in the butt.
God, it sounded like it would suck.
Yeah, but
just buy an Atari.
But you were saving $100, I guess, and were buying some crappy Dell with their proprietary power supplies and
buy an Atari VCS with the custom wood grain finish on the side. It's what we did.
Yeah. And remember, consoles used to suck.
No, they didn't.
Yes, yeah, they did.
No.
They used to suck.
You could
Yes, you could.
No. You could play any decent like first-person shooters on.
Sure you could.
No, because you were playing Halo and Marathon. No! And those were really terrible.
No!
Those were awful, awful games. I mean, like, if you like to simulate riding a little bouncy horse moving about like 3 feet like a minute,
oh my God.
You play Halo. If you want to have a good time, you play Quake.
Twitch gaming.
No, it's Twitch. It's a yeah. I'm the kind of person who likes to play like really really fast games as opposed to you want speed, accuracy, and movement rather than plodding around leaning on the trigger, you know, like as you do in Halo
and Quake. Quake is you telling me Quake is not a laying on the trigger at all times. That's just a constant. You just go.
You must really suck at it then. We should play Quake 3 sometime just to see how that goes. We have machines that are plenty powerful to run Quake 3 at a full resolution. So that would be fun. Because there was that whole bouncy level that I like to run on. Just like, well, I actually did use the rocket launcher lock of them.
I was more of an Unreal Tournament person, which probably is slower. Yeah, exactly.
Their problem with their early games, I thought, was that their weapon balance was tuned so every weapon did the same amount of damage per second, just in a different way. And it was... you know, in the name of balance. Ooh. But it was just completely, you know, not very fun because of that. But I didn't like it anyway. Whereas Quake has like moments of deliberate unbalance in their weapons.
Right.
And which creates all this fear and terror. But there's interesting tactical ways that you can deploy them. And it was a lot of fun.
But that's the way it should be. It should be like, this gun does a lot of damage, but you can only shoot it once every 4 seconds.
Right, right.
Yep. Unless you have the power up, and then you can shoot it indiscriminately, and then everyone hates you.
Yes,
but you know that's kind of awesome too.
Huh.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to PAX this year?
No,
I missed I missed the tickets.
When did they go on sale?
Ooh, at least 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And the worst
it was
part,
like within a weekend, they were all sold out.
Yeah, I mean the first day, as soon as they released the tickets for sale, there was a link on Twitter. I clicked it, and the page wouldn't load.
Yeah.
And then by the time I could get in, the 3-day passes were sold out.
That's crazy. Whoa.
Yeah. So I had to buy single-day passage for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Hmm.
They should just release more tickets. Like, if it gets to be... if it's selling out in, like, you know, a day, like, they should either add another day or...
problem.
I don't know.
The last time we went, the convention center, it was, like, the World Trade Center in Boston?
Yeah.
Is it still there?
Oh, no, it's at the BCEC, I think, Boston Convention Expo Center.
Yeah, that's that big one.
The big one on the seaport?
Yeah, yeah. That's where it was, when we went. What's the
when did we go? 2000?
It was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was there, because I saw you guys randomly in the line.
Like every once in a while. It was pretty packed then. I can only imagine it's bigger now.
Yeah. Well, what they need to do is add another day.
Yeah.
Instead of having a 3-day, have a 4-day convention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a week-long convention.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they need to realize that's not the sort of thing that they have around here.
Yeah. I wonder if they use the entire facility? They're probably big enough to do that now. I wonder what the numbers were. The year we went, I think there were like 40,000 people, something like that.
Something like that.
And I can only imagine it's more than that now. Hmm.
It'd be nice to go. I'd like to go. I mean, my plan was originally I wanted to go every year. And then, of course, I always forgot when the ticket sales were and everything.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I used to fly out to E3 every year, and I just got so sick after 10 years of doing that. I was just like, I'm done. Like, I can't do it anymore. Like,
yeah.
It's just, I hate the area. LA is just a smog pit. It's so gross out there. You fly in, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just got sick. It's just, ugh. And it was just, I got burnt out because it was just so excessive. It was so over the top. Everything was just so, everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I needed to stop going to, I was just numb. By the last couple of years, like, I was just numb. I'd walk around and be like, give me your free things. Give me the free handouts. And I'll just go back to the hotel room.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could eBay everything.
Exactly. It's like, I'm going to pay for my trip.
Yeah. The first year I went, I just wanted to check it out. I wasn't sure if I was even, I had wondered if I'd aged out of the demographics. Yeah,
you say that
people.
All the time.
Well, because I'm old.
I'm too like, old for console games. I'm too old for
when the console games were new, when they had cartridges that you had to blow on them, and they only had 40 pixels across. And, yeah. But
you're never too old. We're the first generation that's actually aging with consoles.
I suppose.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a different... In a way, it feels different because But, you know, I think the old gamers are having their day on the PC. You know, there's a lot of PC gamers coming, you know, the old game developers like Chris Roberts and his Star Citizen Kickstarter. They've hit $40 million in crowdfunding. And
there's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. And you're seeing games like, do you remember a game called Elite for, I think it originally came out on the Commodore 64 or the BBC Acorn.
Dave, now you're dating yourself.
Now I'm dating myself. Yeah, it's, I distinctly remember I was watching War Games when it...
I love the... We had a Commodore 64. It was our first computer, and we bought it because my mom's friend, they had one, and they were showing me all the games that were on it. And it was like some Zorro game, and there was a Friday the 13th game, and there was a Transformers game, and they were all, you know, like NES quality stuff, but it was awesome. And it was like, and that was it. Like, I remember my dad bought a Commodore. It was a 64128.
Nice.
And it would be like, go 64. And it's like, are you sure? And you're like, yes. And then it would turn it into a C64. And that was it. Like, they never did anything. They bought a dot matrix printer. They never did anything with it. Like, I just play games all the time. In fact, what was it? Like 4 or 5 years ago, I was cleaning out my parents' storage shed thing in the backyard, and I just threw all that away because it was just it was just taking up all this space.
You didn't eBay it?
No.
No.
Why would I want to try to ship something that big and heavy? No way. Yeah, I kind of kicked myself. There was that, and then I got rid of like all my Next Generation magazines, which I wish I had kept.
Oh.
What was Next Generation?
It was like, I used to think it was like the pro level gaming magazine, because it was like they would do actual like interviews with developers, and it was nice. It was a really well thought out magazine.
You could think of it as kind of the Wired treatment of a gaming magazine.
Yeah.
At the time it came out, there wasn't anything like Polygon like on the internet. So there wasn't in-depth or considered serious coverage of games. It was more like Nintendo Power stuff. Or there was Electronic Game Monthly.
Yeah.
Basically a bunch of ads and a bunch of people saying, this game is great. You should
play. These were actual, like, you know, we're going to talk to the president of Sega of America and blah, 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 blah. And they would talk like interviews with Howard Lincoln. And it was really good. And they talked about, and it was like 2 pages of reviews, and the rest of it was like really in-depth interviews with developers and game companies and stuff like that. It was a really nice magazine.
Yeah. You kind of miss it.
I do. Really. I do. That and FGN Online, I used to visit every morning. That was
FHM
like
for what?
FGN, First Game News Network.
Oh, I don't know
that. And it was like they'd start updating at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And I would go and have breakfast, and I would go to FGN, and I would learn all the days, all the breaking game news.
Oh, okay. But I used to go to, there was this thing called the Shack something. It was Blues News, and then it was something Shack, and this is where I would get my game news from. This was when the on the PC 3D accelerator cards were just starting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So you had things like the 3DFX Voodoo cards. And back when, like, when you had to buy a sound card.
Yep.
And you had to be very careful about which one you got. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So anyway, like with PAX, what I wanted to do was, well, I wanted to play some tabletop games. I wanted to play D&D. And that day I went to the tables. I waited for like an hour and a half, and it was like tables were freeing up or some DMs didn't show up. And I just wanted to try some of that stuff out to recapture my, I guess, my 7th grade aborted Dungeons & Dragons career, which had just degenerated into a bunch of name-calling and everyone's topping out. I wanted to use my 10-foot rope. My pole could have hit that thing. You know, I draw my longsword and attack.
Magic missile.
Magic missile, magic missile, magic missile. You do 1 point of damage. You are dead.
Yes. So I want to interview this guy because we've talked about him, and he's like this big mysterious enigma and everything.
He is an
enigma. So Kent, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Speak into the microphone, please.
Okay,
so
sure.
Familiarize.
What do I do?
What kind of interview question is
so you
that?
All right, so you live in Nashua.
I do live in Nashua.
How long have you lived in Nashua?
10 years.
Where'd you come from before?
Technically?
Yes.
Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Okay. Did you grow up there?
Yeah, I grew up in Lawrence for the first third of my life, and then I moved to my parents moved me from New Hampshire. Okay. I was traumatized.
Oh, no.
Because, you know, I went from a place that had, like, when you had to explain to someone how to get somewhere, you would be like, well, you go 4 blocks this way, and then you turn and you go 3 blocks that way, and then you'll see the school, and then you go another block, right?
Yep.
And then, you know, you move to New Hampshire, and there's no concept of city blocks. And that was my biggest traumatic experience, moving to New Hampshire.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was just like one big field.
Yeah, it's just like, why are these streets not in a grid? This doesn't make any sense. Why would you pads? Why would you move us here?
The farm.
Wait, yeah, so why did you farm. Why did you move?
No, my parents just wanted to move out of Lawrence. You know, it's not the greatest town. So they had an opportunity to move. At the time, they were renting a duplex. The owner moved to California, and they said, okay, it's time for us to move. And we moved out of Massachusetts to New Hampshire.
Cool. Your parents, were they still working in Massachusetts?
Yeah. My dad works in, my dad's 73 and still drives to Boston every day.
Wow.
That's crazy. He's a crazy man.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I moved to New Hampshire when I was like 12 or 13, and then just been bouncing back and forth, and I ended up back in Nashua.
Okay.
This is actually the second time I lived in Nashua.
Really? Oh,
really?
Yeah, first time back in 2000.
Okay.
I lived in Royal Crest Apartments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I almost think everybody knows someone who has lived at Royal Crest at one point in their life.
It's like a gateway house.
Yeah, it's our version of San Francisco.
Yeah. So I was actually, I just moved to Nashua like 10 years ago, and then I happened to have I was working in Massachusetts, had my resume online.
Yep.
And this company contacted me and said, would you like to work for us? Come in for an interview.
Nice.
And I did. And luckily they were 7 miles from my house.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. So I work at EMC.
Now, what do they do? Okay.
They're primarily a storage company, but they're expanding into the section I work in has to do with email archiving and compliance.
Okay.
Which you probably don't have to deal with, but if you're a publicly traded company or you deal with securities or you're a broker dealer, you have to store your email for like 3 to 6 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And then you have to be able to produce results.
Huh.
Or if you do something like you're Martha Stewart and you sell your stock. And the lawyers pop up and say, hey, we'd like to see all those emails from this time to this time.
Oh,
they go into the system like the one I support.
All right.
And then they retrieve all the emails.
Huh.
And if they can't get them, they call someone like me.
All right. Do you have a special phone voice?
No, it's pretty much
This is one of the things I like about Kenta, because he's always Kenta. He's never someone else. He's just Kenta. He's not Kenta affecting an attitude, or he's not Kenta pretending he's interested.
He's always Kenta, and he's bored,
or he's interested, or he's amused.
It's like a T-shirt design. Always Kenta. It's like That's So Raven. That's So Raven. It's always Kenta. It's the name of a sitcom.
We had to start our T-shirt store now.
It's like always Kenta.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I how the hell did I meet you? I met you because you knew Travis.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I don't know how I met you.
For
a while, it was like Travis's. He used to host up until recently. He was the guy that was hosting my websites. Really nice guy. Mm-hmm. But for like the first like couple of years, like I always associated the two of them together. Like it was just Travis and Kenta.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like it just seemed like they were always doing stuff. And then Travis sort of went off on his whole like I'm a skeptic. I'm the leader of the New Hampshire Skeptics Group, and he kind of just went this way. Yeah, he hosts
a New Hampshire Skeptics Group.
Granite State
Skeptics.
Okay, and so they spend all their time doubting New Hampshire?
I think that's what they do. Yeah. They seem to like to go after the ghost hunters a lot.
They go after them?
Like every time it seems like every time I get contact from Travis now, it's always like, look at this picture. Is this really an orb or is this just a reflection of light coming from the lens?
That's so cool. Wow.
And I'm like, I think it's just the way the light's hitting the lens. And he's like, aha!
There's a picture of Travis that I think... I remember a photo shoot that you were doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was one...
It was like all blue in the background?
Yeah, he was like, he hit the laptop. We did one where he was sitting in front of his laptop and we like bounced some blue light coming into his face and stuff. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's kind of bald. He's like, he shaves his head.
Yeah.
And now he's into juggling too.
He goes down to MIT to juggle. Apparently they have an MIT juggling club or something like that.
That's great.
He goes all the way down to MIT and juggles with people.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
So when he's not fighting anti-vaxxers and ghost hunters.
Ghost hunters.
He's juggling.
This guy sounds amazing. But so the first couple of years, like I just, the two of them were intertwined because it always seemed like they were like together.
Yeah.
I don't know how we met like in person. Like I don't remember the first time.
I don't remember either.
I met Kenta for the first time I think at Bar Camp Manchester.
Okay.
I was in the lunchroom and I said, "There's an Asian dude." And so I was trying to be social and I think I said hello and I think you were minorly irritated by being interrupted from your lunch, and you were polite enough, but not in a talkative mood. And then a couple years went by, and I think we kept seeing each other around that crowd of people, and at some point, it was revealed that we both lived in the same complex. And so that was, I guess, the beginning of, you know, our association.
Yes.
Yep.
Good.
Yep.
Good.
I remember I learned how to fold gyoza properly at their house.
What's that?
Those are those dumplings. The thin skin dumplings with the pork and finely chopped cabbage.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. The Napa cabbage.
Okay.
You never had? Well, you've had dumplings, right?
I probably
kind of like pot
stickers. I have zero experience with anything that's not microwavable. I was totally a microwave kid growing up. So it's unless it's cereal or candy or
all right. So imagine a Hot Pocket.
Yeah.
That's not made.
I think I've had dumplings
material.
Though. They look like little bow ties with meat in them, right?
Yeah, they're bow ties with meat in them.
Exactly.
That's exactly what they are. And these are Japanese bow ties. As opposed to the Chinese style bow ties, which are much puffier.
Okay.
And less delectable.
Yes.
Yeah, so I grew up in a family of two cooks.
Oh.
So my father worked for Legal Seafood back in the day when they would make seafood and then put it into a styrofoam container.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. He was telling me how he used to get in trouble when he started there because they were saying that he wasn't breading the fish fast enough. And they would just tell him, oh, just take all the cod and you just throw it in the big vat of flour and just go like this. And you're waving his hands wildly. But then you throw it all in the fryer later, and then you pull out the fryer later and put it in the containers and get it out the door.
Wow.
And that's how Legal Seafood really started. Yeah. It wasn't the fancy place that the cloth napkins.
Did they want you to, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he started off there, and then he worked for Turner Fishers and all these other seafood. He worked for Anthony's Pier 4 for a little while, all the big seafood places.
Huh.
Wow.
And now he's semi-retired. He works at a fraternity.
So he cooks for a fraternity? Or
yeah, he's just a cook. He goes there. He makes lunch and dinner five days a week for MIT fraternity.
Huh. Now, you have foodie tendencies. Is that something that you picked up yourself? Or is it a family thing?
I think it's from growing up in my family because everyone's like, oh, did you eat Japanese food all the time? Because genetically, I'm Japanese, but I grew up here. Can't even speak the language. Which
same with me. I'm genetically Taiwanese, though. I have no idea what that means.
Do people ever ask you what it's like living in a house?
Yeah.
Yeah, that happened to me in college.
But, people would always say, you eat with chopsticks all the time? No, it's like, no. Mm. You know, my mom makes meatloaf, pot roast, and, one day a week she might make something of Asian extraction. The rest of the time it varies. And then I just grew up with just a ton of different food all the time.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then you learn to appreciate it. And you realize you can't get it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you moved out of the same complex that Dave, did you guys get together and cook at all?
Did we?
I think just that one or two times. It wasn't a whole lot of
time. We did two sessions. We did one session on
curry, I think.
We did do curry once.
And tasted my curry, and then you told me how to do it properly. in the kindest way possible. And that's the way I've been making it since then.
we did the curry. We did tonkatsu one night. Basic egg wash and then throw panko breadcrumbs on it and make a nice crispy pork cutlet.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That sounds
the boys got skills.
And then we did gyoza, which is the pot sticker type things.
Yeah. That was at your new house.
At my new house, which I had to get a new house. The old place was too small.
Yeah.
No garage.
Yeah, so tell us about this hydraulic lift that I keep seeing pictures of.
So I was living in the condo, and then I'd be working on cars, and then I'd be doing stuff. It's like, well, I'm gonna do a rogue alternator swap in the parking lot of the condo. So I'd be out there, looking around. All right, no one's walking. Jack up the corner of the car, get under there, swap out an alternator. I did suspension once.
In the parking lot?
Yeah, in the parking lot.
Wow.
Yeah, but I try to keep a low profile because I'm pretty sure there's nothing in the rules that says you can't do that.
But you don't want it to look like you're one of those guys that are working on cars.
I was basically that guy. And then I realized, this doesn't make any sense. I need to get a house with a garage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And originally, my brother was hunting for a house.
Okay.
And we were looking at houses for him at first. And then we came across this one. I was like, I really like that garage. I'm going to buy that house. So I bought the house, and then I had a garage, and then I realized in the span of 4 months, 5 months, I had done 8 brake jobs on the ground. And I was like, this is terrible. I should get a lift. I tried to put a full, I wanted to put a full size two post mechanics lift.
Yeah.
And then it just wouldn't fit.
No.
So I was like, all
I was going to say, like, I thought, I was like, do you have to like dig into the ground so that
it... Yeah, this is weird. It's just a scissor lift. So it's basically got a scissor mechanism, and you drive the car over it, extend the arms, and it just lifts from the center.
Okay.
Huh. All right. So it's like a big version of a jack?
Like a cherry picker or something? Like one of those?
Yeah, it's like a raising platform. I don't know if you've ever seen like those tables where you can put something heavy on it and then hit like a foot pump and the table jacks up.
Yeah.
No.
It's like for loading. If you're going to like load stuff in the back of a truck, it's really nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Basically like the big version of that that can handle 6,000 pounds.
That's awesome.
So I've got one of those, and now everyone's my, well, all my friends are really good friends now. Right, exactly. They're like, hey.
That's the secret.
Which I don't mind because it's good experience.
That's awesome.
I don't know
that's...
how, I don't remember how I got into it. I just bought a car, and then, you know, one day my brother had worked at an oil change shop, you know, doing oil changes, brake jobs, that kind of thing. So he had some skills. And then one of the first forays I had in auto repair was I swapped an engine.
Okay.
Which it sounds harder than it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because if you're basically replacing the engine, you're just unplugging everything and draining everything.
You're right.
And you just yank it out, put the new one in, and plug everything back in again.
Was that really satisfying?
It was. Yeah. that was fun. I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm going to keep doing this. And then I just kept it up.
Yeah.
But I think there's like a connection between people with like who are interested in engineering and doing mechanic work on cars.
Yep.
There's that.
Yep.
You know, if you played with a lot of Legos as a kid, it's kind of appealing. You're like, well, I know how all these things fit together.
Yep.
And then taking things apart and putting them back together. It's it's interesting.
It's interesting to see the difference between theory and practice.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really irritating, but so that's how that worked. This is how I got into, when I was a kid, I was really interested in guns like every kid is. Except I wasn't allowed to have war toys. So I never had squirt guns because those would poison my mind. You know, it makes sense because I was living in a theological seminary on a mountain in the middle, and all my relatives are, members of the church, as clergymen or as academics or professors. You know, not a single one of them was a business person or an engineer except for one uncle. But it just sort of ate at me that I couldn't get access to this information. So when I got back to the States, I started like researching it. I would buy books and things like that. And so like for the longest time, I had understood that there were these things called automatic pistols, and they somehow got the bullet out of this box and into this thing, and it would go off, and it would somehow do it again. But I had no mechanical concept of how that even worked.
Right.
So when I finally moved to New Hampshire, about 14 years ago, and I got my first handgun. I got the one that I wanted to see how it worked. And it was really satisfying that itch to understand finally how it worked.
So what was the first thing? Did you shoot it? I mean, what was the first thing? Did you take it apart or did you shoot it?
Well, the first thing I did was I took a bunch of safety courses. I didn't want to shoot myself.
Right.
But, in that process, they teach you how to, to properly do a breakdown of the thing so you can see the different parts. But after I bought my first handgun, I took it apart. I looked at every part really carefully and said, so that's how that works. And then that was kind of my fascination just with mechanical things. Huh. Cars like kind of scare the crap out of me. I'm more interested these days in things that are less on the screen and more in the world. Maybe this is a transformation that happens.
Hmm.
When we were watching The Wind Rises, that new Miyazaki movie that was out, and that reawoke a lot of those feelings I remember as a child, like, airplanes, building airplanes, designing hinges for airplanes, and, to make something that's beautiful, beautiful, functional, and that captures one's heart. So, long digression.
So how was that movie?
I liked it. I'm not sure Sid found it.
I liked it. I thought it was. I thought it was long. It was like almost 2.5 hours long. It was a really long movie, and it was kind of slow. And for some reason, I was convinced that they kept using the same piece of music throughout the whole thing, like the same theme. Sure. It was. I was. Like, usually it isn't as redundant as it was in this one, but it seemed like that one little piano tune was just, every time I turned around, they were just using same theme over and over again. And I think I don't know. It was good, but I think the playtime was, and then some of the story, like there was a storyline with his wife or with the girl that becomes his wife, and there's this whole plot line that it just seems very contrived. It just felt very, like, it's put in there for the sake of just making it dramatic and trying to make people cry.
It might have been an actual biographical element of that guy's life.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But then again, it took place during the time of tuberculosis, so that would make sense.
Yeah,
but it just everything, just the way it was delivered, like, you know, it almost came out of nowhere too. It was like, oh, by the way,
it didn't really strike me that way because I've heard so many stories from my own family about what it was like to live during that time in that part of the part of the world, and it just happened all the time.
Right,
people would get sick and they would just die. You know, it'd be some infection that they would die.
Right,
you know, something would fall on them and they would die. They would fire, someone would die. But, you know, my impression of the movie is, when you think of a Miyazaki movie these days, you think of it's going to be this fun cartoon fantasy thing. And this, I think, it would be better described as a biography. It's a biographical movie.
It's an animated biographical movie.
And it was made by Miyazaki, because these are things that are really close to his heart.
Right.
He loves airplanes. He loves that time. And it was almost like, this is the way I remember growing up in Japan. These were the things that were important to us to get ahead as a country, to make wonderful things, and to connect with the world internationally. And to be good people. It's like he's presenting a model of, like, this is how we were.
Right.
And in a way, it's like a love letter to his past, I think. And it's also kind of looking to the future. It says, these are things we don't want to forget. That's kind of the feeling I got away from it. And there were no, like, dancing, birds or, things with umbrellas floating in the air. But although it had, like, a lot of interesting dreamlike qualities to it.
Yep.
But more aspirational than fantastical.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was an animated biography. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. So go in there with those expectations.
I still love his animation style. Like, just those little tiny, little intricate things that normal people would just gloss over. Like, he studies all the little fine details of movement and stuff.
There was all the background action that was going on.
Yeah.
It just kind of gave life to it. It's worth seeing. Is it still showing? Very limited release.
Yeah, it was at the Tingsboro Theater, which I'd never been to. We just went for the first time. I didn't realize it was like
that. That is my theater of choice.
Yeah, it is now. I'm going to start going now. It's like those big comfy recliner chairs, and it's like less seats per theater.
Yeah.
But we discovered really quickly that you have to sit in the back.
Well, what you have to do is the day before you want to go online, and you can just book your seat.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the trick.
Oh, did you?
Veronica Mars movie.
Okay. All right, I'll have to remember that. Yeah, but it was awesome, and it was the big, puffy, comfortable seats.
They just sound like they're farting, though, when you're you kept adjusting yours.
Yeah.
At least I thought you were adjusting yours.
Well, that was we went to the 9:05 show, so it was like, 10:30, 11 o'clock when we got out. And I could feel like the chair, like I would adjust the chair back further and further. I'm like, I'm just going to lay. Because you're almost laying down. Like, it's almost like a perfect, it's really nice. But we'll have to, the next movie we go. I mean, I can't see us going to any other theater now.
RoboCop?
Yeah. I'm not going to stop it with the RoboCop.
The new RoboCop.
It looks interesting, actually.
It does look interesting, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. I'm telling you, I would much prefer them, if they really want to make more money, just take old movies and clean them up, because they're going to have to now since everything's moving to digital projection. So do all of these, like, clean them up, do all these remasters, these 4K remasters, and then re-release stuff in the theater. I would pay money to go see Goonies in the theater again, like on a big screen. I would pay money to go see Ghostbusters again.
Or they could just redo Goonies.
No. Yeah. Well, they're talking about doing
Justin
a sequel.
Timberlake needs
they're
work.
Talking about doing a sequel.
There's I could see Justin Timberlake as the big brother.
No.
Yeah.
No. You know, like, why remake this? Just release them. Like, we want to get money out of these new younger audiences. Well, re-release the other ones. You know? I just don't understand the purpose of a lot of these remakes. Just re-release the originals.
I think the problem is that younger people don't appreciate the older movies.
No.
They're going to see it as like, that came out in mid-80s. Why would I want to see that?
It's so old.
That's right. It's old.
Because it's good. There's good stuff out there.
I wonder how music is different now, though. Like, if you're a kid now growing up, there's so much music available. I wonder if you stay with contemporary stuff or do you develop an appreciation for the older stuff because it's so accessible.
Well, I mean, the best thing is like, what, check those music tracking things. I mean, it seems like Led Zeppelin's always selling.
What's
like,
the music tracking thing?
I don't know, whatever Billboard uses to track, like, you know, sales and stuff like that. I mean, there's always, you know, Pink. I mean, how many people go out and buy Dark Side of the Moon?
It might be everyone who's old.
I think younger people, I don't know.
They still have buying power.
I think younger people are picking up a lot of that older stuff. And
yeah.
You know?
Do we know any young people?
God forbid if like all the punk music out there nowadays is like, I owe this to Sum 41. No! Like, who's the Clash or the Sex Pistols? I don't understand. Like, no. I don't think they're, you know.
But Kenta has some connection with some musical... groups.
Oh, you were like in with Guster or something.
Well,
who?
Yeah, back in the day, like I saw them one day. Some buddies of mine were like, "Hey, we're going to go to Boston. Do you want to go?" I'm like, "Yeah, we'll go." So we went to Boston, and these three guys were just playing on the street. So the first time I ever saw them play, they had no album.
Wow.
They had a demo tape back when tape was a thing.
Yes, cassette tapes.
And they were just playing on the street. And what got me was they did this cover of "Down in It" by Nine Inch Nails. Yeah. And we decided that we would all chip in $1 each to so $3 to buy this demo tape. And then ever since then, I've been following them. So I had like listened to that 4-song tape, and when they came out with their first album, I bought that.
Yeah, and but then, like now somebody was it Travis hosting their website?
No. So what happens is in 2000 I registered Guster.net.
Okay.
And what Guster.net was they? I mean. Guster owned the .com. I bought the .net.
Okay.
And then I would put up fan stuff.
Oh, okay.
So it was just a fan site. So,
all right, okay.
And this is like sort of pre-WordPress days where there weren't
like
really any.
Yellow and.
There weren't content management systems out there.
Tripod.
Really. I mean, there might have been, but nothing that was like easily accessible. So I just wrote the whole thing. So I wrote it all in Perl.
Huh.
So people could do stuff like upload a set list and it would come into a queue and I would approve it if it was valid, or they could upload pictures. And the picture would get tagged with like who the photo was taken by.
Oh, that's great.
And then I would just log in, you know, once a week and then see the pictures and then just approve them.
Wow.
So I was just running a fan site.
And now is it tied in, like officially tied in to them now?
Nope.
Or do they recognize it or anything?
And I think they recognize it, but it hasn't been updated in ages.
Oh. Huh. That's kind of cool though.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's cool.
Kenda's connected in mysterious ways.
Yeah. Has it been 45 minutes already?
It's been 45
minutes.
That's
crazy.
Yeah.
It's quick.
Are you glad? 30 minutes was really fast. So this allowed the extra 15 minutes gives us some time to just, you know, warm up and shoot the breeze and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's still short.
Yeah. We'll have to get him to come back and do us an updated one.
You were talking about asking Ken to do some stings for us?
Well, I don't want to have him do it now when the music and stuff is going.
Well, these are all separate tracked.
Oh, they are?
So I can separate it out later.
Well, I want to do like a Ed McMahon kind of, like I want to have an official thing that we can play at the beginning of the podcast now. So you could, like the first thing you could say is, you know, like, live from the Sid Caesar Photography Studios, it's Sid and Dave's Unnamed Podcast. And then like, then when the music could come in, and then you could be like, I'm Kenta Koga, and these are here are your hosts, Sid Caesar and Dave Say.
Oh, yeah. You do it way better than I could.
Well, I'm
going to need some copy. Where's my copy? I can't work under these conditions.
I'm going back to my trailer.
He's like,
throw my coffee cup across the studio.
Yeah. I heard this podcast last week. About similar topics, creative living type stuff.
Yeah.
And they had a live band on it, which sounded
what?
Like, so the guys talk you over, and then, like, he says, and we're a podcast! And then this orchestra. I don't know if they have something doing with software or if it's, like, pre-recorded stuff, but it made me insanely jealous.
That's crazy. Yeah. Speaking of live bands, we're going to have a musical guest at the end of April here. We just announced the Brian Thomas Trio is going to be performing. I think it's going to be April 26th, but once we get it all solidified, we're going to do another one of those bring your own chair type concerts, which will be pretty cool. All right. Well, I guess that's going to wrap it up. I want to thank Kenta Koga for coming in and chatting with us for a little while. I guess we'll see you next week. Until then, this is photographer Sid Caesar.
Hey, Kenta Koga.
And we'll see you guys later. Have a good week.
Bye.
Actually, we won't be here next week because I'm going to be in Washington, D.C.
Awesome.
So we'll be back And Michael Ballar, visit him at michaelballar.com.
He's got something coming up.
Check it out. And we might not be next week because I'm going to be in Washington, so the week after.
Yeah. Okay.